Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello there, Tay. All right, but I am worn slap out.
You're worn slap out?
I am worn slap out. It was a grind, and I didn't know if I'd make it, but I finally dragged myself across the finish line.
What did you finish?
65 episodes of Love Island, UK. Oh, my God. I didn't know when your mom made me start that there were 65 goddamn episodes.
Did you enjoy it?
No, but it was like a train wreck or a car wreck. You just had to look. It just kept getting worse, and you just had to look and follow, and you got all these people. I had to turn on subtitles to understand their Cockney accent. I mean, I couldn't even understand them, and they were speaking, I guess, the King's English, but I sure couldn't understand it.
Well, why did you keep watching it?
Well, it was, you know, I started it, and I have to finish things I start.
Wow. Did you watch it with Mom, or at some point did you just start going solo?
Oh, no. Mom and I watched it every night. Of course, she enjoyed it. She wished there were more episodes. I was so glad when we finally got to number 65. It was unbelievable.
This is why I'm always weary of when frankly, you or Mom tell me to watch a show, because sometimes you have really good taste, and then sometimes you watch stuff like this.
Well, that's a mom's choice, and I just started watching it, but it was just so, the people on it, for the most part, were, you know, I don't know, I don't want to speak disparagingly of them. I'm sure they have lots and lots of followers, so I don't want their followers to come after me.
You think they're going to find us here on the BoozeCast?
You never know. There was a lot of booze being consumed, so, you know, they might have wanted to learn a thing or two. I don't know. But it was Love Island, UK. It was, oh, man. But 65 episodes. Well, that was a grind to get through that. I never thought we would get through it.
Well, after that, you deserve a drink.
You're right about that.
Wow. And I think maybe an island-appropriate drink.
Yeah, something. I mean, it was on an island, tropical island. Oh. It was in Spain, where they were.
We're gonna go to a different island for this episode. I'm gonna, I don't know. Do you think Margaritaville's an island? I'd like idea.
It's an island in your mind.
Yes. Well, we just passed National Margarita Day. That was February 22nd. Kind Woo-hoo! Of a weird time, I think. Right? Like, wouldn't you think that would be in the heat of the summer?
Well, yeah, you would think so. I mean, of course, you want to get away. Maybe that's what it's representing. You want to get away to the beach and escape.
Wow, that makes sense. Sort of like a Christmas in July. You've got margaritas in winter.
In February. Yeah.
Sure. Why not? But yeah, I thought since we just had... Margarita Day, we could talk a little bit. We talked about the margarita, like, on an episode like a year and a half ago. But, you know, now that you're on the show, I think it would be a missed opportunity if we didn't talk about Jimmy Buffett and the margarita together.
I mean, he's the king of the margarita.
That's true. That is definitely true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, instead of just being a one-day-a-year thing, I think that it ought to be a one-day-a-week. I think instead of Monday, we ought to have Margarita Day.
I think that's fine. Nobody likes Monday. We don't need Monday anymore.
No, but everybody would love it.
If they're canceled.
Yeah, if it was Margarita Day, Saturday, Sunday, Margarita Day, Tuesday. Everybody would love it. Everybody would look forward to it. I mean, even Garfield would probably like it.
Oh, absolutely. He hates Mondays. That would be a good way to, like, all this talk of how bad the 5-day work day is, or the work week is. Like, what if we do, okay, it's still a 5-day work week, but Monday is Margarita Day. So, like, you can come in late, you know, you can have a few on the job. It's kind of a trial run to getting back into the week. Come in sharp on Tuesday. Mondays is kind of a fuck it day.
Yeah, it's a boozy casual Friday.
Yeah. I feel like I would, because, you know, Friday already has that energy of like, man, the week's almost over. Like, kind of, it's, you know, Fridays aren't too stressful because it can only get so bad. The weekend's right there. But if you found a way to make Mondays more bearable.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's right. That's what I think we ought to, if elected president, I will move towards eliminating Monday and making Margarita Day fall between Sunday and Tuesday.
I think that sounds fine. I will vote for that. I'm a single voter or a single issue voter, and my issue is margaritas.
And I bet Jimmy Buffett would vote for us too.
I think so. Maybe, you know, he's politically involved, but he might go for that.
Yeah.
But before we get to the man, you know, I do want to give a quick rundown of the history of the margarita. Just briefly, like I said, we mentioned it before, but, a refresher, of course, obviously, if you don't know what a margarita is, it's tequila, Cointreau or orange liqueur, and lime juice, shaken, usually in like a 2 3/4 3/4 build, and with a salt rim. So that's a margarita. Now the margarita, like a lot of the cocktails we've talked about, has a sort of complicated and not quite clear origin story, but all of them seem to emerge around the 1930s at the earliest. Now, one of the earliest sort of theories on this that I've heard, actually, I remember this forever ago from, do you remember the Alton Brown show? Like, he has lots of shows.
Right.
His first show, like his cooking science show.
I don't know. I've seen several of them that he was on. I'm not sure if it was the original one.
Yeah, he had one where he taught, I mean, it was really cool. Like, he broke down, like, the history and science of a lot of different things. And he did an episode where he talked about the margaritas. And it stuck with me because I think it makes a lot of sense, because he postulates that, you know, when you look at a margarita and you look at the time it emerges from, how it came about seems pretty obvious, because 1930s, what was going on in the 30s, drink-wise?
What was going on? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That dominated everything.
Well, so you had a lot of American drinkers going everywhere to drink. A lot of them were going south of the border. And popular drinks at the time were the Daisy.
They're following Hemingway.
Yes. Hemingway was leading the charge. But a Daisy was a build, similar to like how a sour is a build. A Daisy is a build where you have 2 ounces of a base. You know, there was like gin daisies, a brandy daisy would have been like a sidecar. But 2 ounces of a base, 3/4 ounce of some sort of sweet liqueur, and then 3/4 ounce of citrus. So the difference between a daisy and a sour is just that the sweetness comes from a liqueur instead of a syrup. But you would have had people going south of the border ordering things like sidecars, and you had bartenders that were working with what they had. You know, you look at a sidecar and you've got brandy, lemons, and Cointreau with a sugar rim. That could have very easily been translated into tequila, lime, and Cointreau with a salt rim, because that's what bartenders had. So.
And of course, it's delicious.
Well, that too. But the idea that it just would have happened naturally from people going and asking for drinks with that build, and then people were improvising, makes a lot of sense. But nonetheless, there are people that lay claim to it personally, as this is the drink that I created. And I mean, the biggest idea that this was just something that sort of happened is probably in the name itself. Margarita is Spanish for daisy. So daisy was a pre-existing cocktail build.
There
Margarita
you go.
Is just the Mexican version of it.
The lime daisy.
yeah, I mean, tequila daisy, that is a margarita.
Mm-hmm.
But the first claim dates back to 1938 when Carlos Denny Herrera, who was a bartender and owner of a restaurant in Tijuana, Mexico, had a beautiful young dancer. So the story goes, beautiful young Ziegfeld dancer at his bar, Marjorie King, and she suffered from an allergy to all spirits but tequila, but she didn't want to drink her tequila straight. So he sort of improvised, you know, added a little bit of something sweet, added some citrus, some salt, and created the margarita for her. So that's sort of the first claim. There's another, like, similar time period, 1942, by Francisco Pancho Morales, who is said to have invented it at Tommy's Place Bar in Juarez. And then there's another story that gets thrown into the mix, which is probably, I think, the least believable of the three, and that's that there's this socialite based in Dallas, but was like had a house in Acapulco, and her name was Margarita, and she created this drink in honor of herself and shared it with her friends, yeah, who were like, you know, members of like the Hiltons, like famous rich people, and that this was her creation. So not by a bartender, she named it after herself, which just happened to be a Daisy build, despite the name being Daisy. I don't know about that one.
No, I don't buy that. That's not a rich person's drink. That's a every man's drink. Rich people wouldn't drink that. They drink martinis and Manhattans and things like that.
Well, and even if she'd, you know, she might have Columbused it. She might have had it in some other bar and then decided it was her own.
Yeah.
Because the timeline-wise, you know, you have your two claims, 38, 42. The first time it goes in print in a newspaper is in 45, and Margarita makes her claim in 48. So it was already recorded as a done deal by then.
Yeah. Yeah.
In any case, you know, whoever did create it, the Margarita, you know, really like in the late 40s, early 50s, on through the 60s, really established itself as a beloved cocktail in American culture. And I mean, nowadays, margaritas are the favorite cocktail in America. 60% of American drinkers listed as one of their favorite drinks. There are close to 200,000 margaritas made on the hour in our country.
Wow. Man, I feel like I'm missing out. I haven't had one in an hour.
You gotta meet your quota.
I know.
And I think depending on whoever invented the drink, the man responsible for probably the most sales of margaritas is Jimmy Buffett.
I would think so. I believe that his song popularized it quite a bit.
Yes. He was born in 46, which I think is funny, is that he was born just slightly after the margarita was created.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And so the margarita came and heralded the birth of Jimmy Buffett on Christmas Day in 1946.
Christmas Day. He's a Christmas baby. And he was a gift to us all.
Mm. And he grew up in the South, right? He was born in Mississippi, but raised in Alabama.
Yep. His grandfather was a captain on a steamship, and his father also traveled to India and Africa with the Army Corps of Engineers before they settled in Mobile, Alabama. So he truly was a son of a sailor.
Oh.
And his Mobile, Alabama just happens to be where your grandmother, my mother, grew up too. She was about a few years before him. And she did. And the other coincidence there, besides him being in Mobile and she was in Mobile, is then he went to Auburn University, and that's where my mom went and my dad went. Both went to Auburn.
Man,
so they were a little bit ahead of him, though. They weren't there at the same time. They didn't cross paths, but they were around there.
He's basically your uncle, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think it's funny they told the story that that he saw a fraternity brother in college with a guitar that garnered a lot of attention from all the girls because of the guitar. So he quickly learned a few basic chords and started playing himself to attract women folk of his own.
That's a step up, because he played trombone in his like high school band.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I guess the trombone doesn't get the lead.
You know, the trombonist is sitting in the corner by himself. The guy with the guitar, just like in Animal House, the guy playing the guitar on the steps and all the ladies sitting around him, and Bluto Jim Belushi comes through there and grabs his guitar and smashes it on the wall. That was Stephen Stills, I believe, that was playing the guitar.
Well, and Buffett was—he was in a fraternity, right? He was a frat boy.
Uh huh. Yeah, Now, he didn't last at Auburn very long. He went from there to a community college. He was staying in college because he was didn't want to get drafted, because there was still a draft enacted at the time. And so he went to a community college, and then eventually ended up at Southern Miss and got his bachelor's degree from Southern Mississippi in Pascagoula.
History, right?
Yeah. And it served him well, because a lot of his songs, he's a storyteller. I mean, he's a singer-songwriter, but he's also a storyteller. And most all his songs are based in somebody he knew, or some situation he was in, or something, or a cause that he's, you know, standing up for, or something like that. It's not just like, as Paul McCartney once said, silly little love songs, you know. they were stories about people, and that's why I connected with them so much. I've always liked the storytellers, the Harry Chapin and who else? Billy Joel, you know, they were the storytellers. Jim Croce, which actually Jimmy Buffett crossed paths with Jim Croce, and Jim Croce mentored him early on in his career.
Well, that was part of how he got his start, right?
Like, yeah,
after the passing of Jim Croce, he was. Mm-hmm. Brought on for a recording?
Right. He got to fill in, because he played the same type of music at the time, kind of as Jim Croce did. So he got his first album launched because of that. But it only sold 400 copies.
Yeah, he wasn't a big hit at first, right? He had a couple albums come out before he hit it big.
Yeah, he had to find a sound. And here's something. I found something out because... You know, we got to meet Jimmy Buffett because of Justin's connection with Lynn, and Lynn connecting with Jimmy Buffett. And so when Jimmy Buffett came through Cincinnati, we all got to go backstage and spend some time with him. And he is absolutely amazing. He's even better in person than he is when he's on stage. But he's just a great guy. But I asked him at the time, I said, you know, the first time I became aware of you, I was in college, and there was a record store that I'd go to now and then and look for records, and they had what they called the cutout bin, where they had like a kind of like a hole punched in the corner of it, and you could get those for like $2 an album or something like that. And so I was looking through there, and here was one. It was Jimmy Buffett, High Cumberland Jubilee. Now, this was before he was... really any much of anything. I'd heard a couple of his songs, but you know, he wasn't big like that. And it was High Cumberland Jubilee, and I took that home and played it, and I liked it, but it wasn't anything like his music now. But I asked about that, and I said do you remember that album? He goes, I don't want to talk about that.
Really?
Well, the reason is that was supposed to be his follow-up album. That was his second album, and the music company lost the tapes to it, and so it never got released. And so that's kind of the ironic thing. That's what pushed him towards his future, because he didn't have any money and he didn't know what to do. And so a friend was heading down to Key West and said, come on with me, let's go down there. And they basically became buskers down there playing for money. And that's kind of where he developed his Gulf Western, as they called it, music.
Yeah, it's a very, like, I can't think of another artist that exists in the same sort of space that he exists in.
No, but you had ones that did that, like the Beach Boys. The Beach Boys had a very specific sound. You know, theirs was beach music, but this is more, like I said, that it's often described, said a country and western. It's called Gulf and Western. Mm. So.
Well, obviously the album of importance as far as this topic is concerned was... what came out in 77, right? That was Changes in Latitude, Changes in Attitudes, which I have your copy of.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the one that launched Margaritaville.
Mm-hmm. And it was sort of a surprise hit. Like, when he tells the story about that song, it was just, like, he was having some margaritas in Austin, Texas, and then started the song, and then, like, kind of finished it up when he was in Key West, just sort of seeing the new trend of people descending upon it for vacation, like, you know, spring breakers and stuff. And that put the song together. And he brought it to his producer, Norbert Putnam, and described the song to him, like, you know, oh, it's about a a guy who lost a flip-flop and stepped on a beer can and, you know, can't find salt for his margarita. His producer was like, well, that sounds awful.
Woke up with a tattoo. He doesn't know how he got it.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like a good song at all. And then, you know, Jimmy Buffett was like, okay, well, whatever. I'm going to finish it. And, like, finished it, and it was Margaritaville.
Yeah.
So, you know. Kind of one of those, like, not like a, you know, a magnum opus. Like, it just sort of wrote it in, like, a couple days, you know. It's like those stories you hear about Dolly Parton writing. What did she write? Like, Jolene and I Will Always Love You on the same day or something like that.
Well, some of the best songs, that's the way they're written. I understood that like, Jimmy Page played some of the main riffs for Stairway to Heaven, and Robert Plant listened to that and then sat there and in 15 minutes wrote out the whole song Stairway to Heaven.
Damn.
And I mean, you know, it's amazing. I mean, those are just like bolts of genius that come from the sky or something, you know?
I like that we're comparing Stairway to Heaven to Margaritaville.
Hey, they're all classics.
That is true. Well, and I mean, however you feel about the song, you can't deny the damn empire that's been built on top of it.
Yeah.
If there's one thing that really defines what sets Jimmy Buffett apart as an artist and frankly, as a businessman, it's the massive empire that he's built around his image.
Yeah, he didn't just tour and play and do music. He built an empire around a lifestyle that he invented or created or popularized, however you want to put that.
Yeah, well, it really did start at his live shows, though, because that was the thing, like, his shows were so much more popular than his albums were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think instead of being, like, viewing that as something bad, he embraced that and he ran with it. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, people like, you know, you want to show up, you want to have drinks, you want to wear your hats and your Hawaiian print shirts. And, like, how do we capitalize on this? I mean, this was something we talked about in the first Margarita episode, but, like, you know, his prowess as a businessman, like, starting like 83 when Chi-Chi's, you remember Chi-Chi's?
Oh yeah.
I don't think they don't still exist, right? Are there still Chi-Chi's out there?
I don't know. We had one here in town and I loved going there. That's where the seafood nachos we make, that's where they came from. Yep. But
had the
pitchers of margaritas. Yeah, we loved their margaritas.
Well, but they in 83 they did a Margaritaville drink special, and Jimmy Buffett's, you know, whatever, like, got his lawyers involved to sue for the use, which you can't technically do. Like, a song title can't be copyrighted that way. But because they presented it as, like, well, it's not just a title, it's a whole lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of our brand that draws people to our shows. They won the case. And then I think, you know, probably inspired by the idea of, like, a restaurant using this as a drink special. Then, like, you know, a few years later, in 85, he opened up his first Margaritaville brick and mortar.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and we came across one of them back in the early 90s when we were vacationing down at Gulf Shores, Alabama, and we're going back to our cottage, and we looked, and here was a restaurant slash bar, and it said JB's Margaritaville, and we looked at each other and laughed and said, huh, Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville. Yeah, right. So we stopped in there just to look around. It was almost empty. And we didn't think much about it, had a few drinks. It was pretty nice. So the next night, we were coming back from dinner, said, let's stop in old JB's Margaritaville again. And the parking lot was completely packed. There was a line out the door, and we're like, what's going on? Old Jimmy Buffett had decided to show up and do an impromptu show at his Margaritaville. It was Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville. We didn't even know that. We didn't realize that was there, but that was at Gulf Shores, right on the Floribama line.
Had a near miss.
Yeah. Yeah, we almost encountered him then. Instead, it was years later in Cincinnati.
Well, but you know, I read also in Cincinnati that the term Parrothead originates from a show there.
Yeah, from one of his bandmates, one of his Coral Reefer guys, Timothy B. Schmidt, who I think also played with the Eagles some or something like that. Yeah. But he looked out, and that's what he coined the phrase. He said that There are all these people that keep coming back in these island shirts and these wild hats. They look like a bunch of parrot heads.
Yep.
And it stuck. It was a funny story about that. Jimmy Buffett, when he was, he had a home down around Miami, and he would go to the Miami Heat basketball games. And he was at one front row, of course. He got one of those front row seats like the celebrities do, like Jack Nicholson out in L.A. and stuff. But he got a front row seat. Well, the referee from the game came over and kicked Jimmy Buffett out of the game because they said he kept screaming and saying bad words. And there was a mother and a child sitting next to him. And they said that he was screaming bad words so that he had the security remove him from there. So Pat Riley, who was then the coach of the Heat, went to him. He said, "You don't know who that is, do you? You can't kick him out of here." He said, "Aren't you a parrot head? You don't know anything about that? You're not a parrot head?" And this guy had no idea who Jimmy Buffett was. He had no idea what a parrot head was. But this coach was calling him a parrot head, so he threw him out, too.
I thought it was an insult.
Yeah, he thought he was insulting him.
Certain circles, they might consider that.
Yeah, this guy must have led a sheltered life if he lived in Miami and he didn't know what a parrot head was.
Well, and this wasn't too long ago, right? This was just
Well, it was in the early 2000s.
Yeah, that's, I mean, by then, like, I mean, you know.
Everybody should have known about parrot heads and Jimmy Buffett by then. We took you and Sydney to a concert in what? It was in the early to mid-90s, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely don't think I was, old enough to, like, see over the railing at the first show we went to.
Charlie and Cooper have already been to a couple of them.
I know, yeah.
We start them off early in the Smurl family as far as being parrot heads.
Well, but, you know, they were talking about how one of the things that's powerful about him, his brand, is that he's never lost a fan. He just gains them. That it's not something that people really grow up and out of.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of grow into and stay there. And it is interesting in that. Because, like, I was surprised. I mean, that last show we went to was a couple years ago. It was right before everything shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the summer before that. But to see, like, a lot of young college people there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Like, to me, it was like, well, I grew up with parents that grew up as young adults when his music was really popular. So it kind of made sense that I would hear it.
Right.
But then to see, like, you know, 20-year-olds of the next generation that also are listening to it. It just gets passed down.
And this guy's in his 70s up there.
Yeah.
And he's singing and performing, and people, they're loving it and dancing, and he keeps enthralled. It's like you say, he just keeps gaining a bigger army.
Well, and it is like, you know, when you go to his shows, like, it makes sense that, like, he saw that that's where the success was and capitalized on it, because it's not just, you don't just show up, you know, 15 minutes before, you know, the show goes up. You camp out all day, you tailgate, you probably, depending on how committed you are, spend a week on your goofy costume.
Yeah. But so many of his songs, I mean, yes, he had the, you know, the big hits like Margaritaville and Come Monday and, you know, Cheeseburger in Paradise, but some of the other ones are ones that really spoke to me, and they were about real life people, like A Pirate Looks at 40. That was a friend of his that died in his early 40s, and this was kind of based off of a conversation they had together, and that's what he wrote that song after. And then the other one that always gets me every time I hear it is Captain and the Kid.
Aww.
And he's singing that about his grandfather. And his grandfather.
Are you getting choked up right now?
A little bit, yeah.
You
know, to cry. That's what I say. Those songs get me every time. And just thinking about them gets me. But, you know, knowing that they were based on actual people and not just somebody writing a song for the sake of the words rhymed, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's why they connect and why they stick with people, though. They're real.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know, like, because one of my favorites is He Went to Paris, which I don't know if that's about anybody, but I've always loved that story as somebody that, you know, has a good case of wanderlust.
Like. Yeah. Well, I think it probably was about somebody that he knew. One particular harbor. That's a great one.
Yeah.
It's hard to reason with hurricane season. You know, there's just so many good songs. You just have to leave them out. Living and Dying in 3/4 Time.
Well, and I mean, you know, as far as booze goes, there's a lot of songs about drinking. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
The what happens when you drink.
Waking up hungover. What's when he shot his freezer? He had cabin fever.
Yep. And of course, boat drinks somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Boat Drinks has a funny story behind it. Are you aware of it?
No, I didn't know about that one.
I mean, if you listen to the lyrics, it just sounds like, you know, a bunch of people hanging out, ordering boat drinks. But apparently... Mm-hmm. for whatever reason, he wrote it after a night where he was actually in Boston, of all places, and it was freezing cold, and he was drinking rum and tonic. Interesting combination. And he was trying to get home, and he was pretty wasted, and he couldn't get a cab. So he saw, like, a taxi that didn't have no one was in the driver's seat, but it was idling out front of a hotel. And this is the story he tells. He just went in and got inside of it and drove himself back to his hotel. Left the fare inside of the taxi. He clarified that. He definitely left the fare in there, but he left the taxi there. Yeah. And then wrote boat drinks. Yeah. Okay, like, just like just a little bit of theft involved in that song.
And then he had two songs that were always special to me too. Brown Eyed Girl. Now, of course, he didn't write Brown Eyed Girl, but he cut his own version of that, and that always made me think of Sydney. And then he came out with, later on in his career, Delaney Talks to Statues, and that always reminded me of you.
Well, and I didn't know the name Delaney, because I know it's one of his children, but it was also the middle name of his father, I believe.
Yeah, and his grandfather. Right. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
And that's why he gave his daughter that name. She's Sarah Delaney and Buffett, and then his oldest daughter, Savannah Jane. Mm. And that, you know, he wrote that about his daughter, Delaney.
Well, and also, you also associate Little Miss Magic with Sid, too, right?
Yeah, that's another Jimmy Buffett song. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that one's a good one, too.
Jimmy Buffett song.
No, the one that she gets, she cringes at, and everybody makes fun of me, but it was out at the time when she was being born, and it's Creed's Arms Wide Open. I know. Let me hear it. I don't care. I'll argue with anybody. That's a damn good song. And it got me. It spoke to me at the time, a late in life child coming along and everything else going on. And you're basically asking, I don't know what I've got to give you, but I don't know how long I'll be around here with you, but I want to give you some good words.
I think that is a beautiful legacy for Riley to carry through her life.
And it ironically says the doctor that was delivering her played music in there while he was delivering her, and right as she was pulled out, that song started playing on the radio.
He timed it. He timed it.
No, he didn't know that.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. Yeah, it was. Oh. It was. What do you call that? Serendipity.
Absolutely, fate.
Yeah,
I love that.
So now Riley is saddled with that song. It plays on my phone whenever she calls me.
I love that so much. I love that for her.
She's not thrilled with it.
Back to Margaritaville. I was at his empire. Like, speaking of that, like, you know, he's got like what, like 75 properties, hotels, casinos, retirement resorts, as a cruise line,
restaurants.
Yeah, restaurants. If you don't want to leave the house, you've got at home like frozen foods. He's got like chips and salsa brands, tequila brands, margarita mix. Just anything, clothing, shoes, hats, outdoor wear, like all sorts of stuff. But of course, I was the newest one here in New York is the, I guess it's just called Margaritaville, but it's like an entire hotel complex in Times Square with like a lobby bar, like a rooftop bar, two restaurants, and a cafe. It's got a pool. Obviously, it has hotel rooms. It's just this whole themed complex of Jimmy Buffett right in the middle of New York City. And I didn't even know it opened. It opened, like, during the pandemic. It had been in construction beforehand, but I guess it just got to the point where, like, we got to open it. So on a whim, some friends and I went and stayed there a couple months ago overnight. And, like, it was actually really nice.
Yeah.
The rooms were gorgeous, like... The drinks obviously were great, you know. It felt like just an escape. You didn't feel like you were in the middle. Times Square is a hellacious place to be stuck, but if you got to be somewhere, Margaritaville is a pretty good option.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing about him. Besides being all the other things, he's a fantastic entrepreneur, and he spots a good deal when he sees one. You know, it's like he's got the Land Shark beer that they have out. He got into a contract with, I think, Anheuser-Busch, approached him, and they developed Landshark beer. I mean, he's got a lot of different things. He wrote a couple of different musicals. One of them went on Broadway for a short period of time, and that's where Justin and Lynn and Jimmy all went to it all together, and it ran for 100 and some performances and closed, and they were supposed to start touring regionally, but COVID hit, yeah, and that shut that down.
Well, it wasn't a huge success, but I feel like that's one of the things, looking at all of his ventures, that I think stands out is that, like, I feel like he doesn't really get bogged down by things not going well. Like, even like his second restaurant that opened, which I do think it was actually that one in Alabama that didn't last, like, it closed, but it's like he continued to just keep trying things, you know, like his concerts were selling better than his albums. Okay, let's focus on my concerts. Like,
right.
It doesn't seem like he's ever really, you know, when things don't work out, it's like, all right, well then what can work out? I don't know. Like, there's that spirit of just like, just keep at it. Things will work, that I admire, you know. It's easy for have like one failure kind of take all the wind out of your sails, but that doesn't seem to be the way he works.
Well, he also got into writing. And
oh, yeah.
He published a collection of short stories in 1989 that was Tales from Margaritaville. And then his 1992 mystery novel, Where's Joe Merchant, spent months on the New York Times bestseller list for fiction. And then he also co-authored children's books. But he is one of only seven people in the world that has had a number one bestseller in fiction and nonfiction. I mean, he really has distinguished himself. The other one was A Pirate Looks at 40 that he put out there. Well, it's actually 50. A Pirate Looks at 50 was the name of the book. And that was basically a story of his own life. But my favorite story about it, though, I think, is when the Jamaican police force tried to shoot him down. So he's a certified pilot. He can fly those amphibian planes or whatever that can land on the water. And he was leaving Jamaica, and the police force came out there firing guns, actually hit the plane he was in, forced him to land, and it's because they thought he was a drug smuggler.
And wait, and who did he have? Who did he have on the plane with him?
Besides his wife and two kids, he had U2's Bono was on the plane with him.
There was like a wild-ass celebrity on the plane with him. Bono, it was Bono.
Yeah, and he had Bono on the plane with him when he got shot down. And so anyway, they smoothed it over, and the authorities apologized and let him go. And that's where he came out with the song Jamaica Mistake. Right. And that's where he wrote it after that. But that's what I say. All his stories, all his songs are based on actual events. The man is just a walking, just thing, just of interest. Everything he does is interesting.
Well, most interesting man in the world.
Yeah. They should have had a picture of him rather than that other guy.
Well, I think it's cool that you can't not just, however you feel about his music, however you feel about whatever, like the branding he's chosen, you gotta respect how much he's made from that. He's not somebody that started out like, you know, common confusion that, oh, Buffett, like, does he share a lineage with Warren Buffett? Like, no, they apparently know each other now, but they're not related.
Well, I mean, the whole sound that he developed, too. I mean, how many people sit there and say, let's see, we got some guitars and, you know, we got, we're going kind of pop, a little country. Well, why don't we throw some steel drum in there?
Yeah.
You know, steel drum is prevalent throughout there. That's kind of what gives them their distinct sound that they have. And then everything's always got kind of an island twist to it, you know? So it just makes it relaxing and fun.
I mean, I feel like it's also distinctly, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but it's distinctly like an American escapism, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to have enough money to just retire on a boat and just chill for the rest of my life. Like, that is just such a, you know.
And he's got that, but he isn't retired. He's still out there.
Keeps going.
Yeah, he's still out there going.
Oh, go ahead.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, one thing that he has had to give up in his old age, it's a bit of a bummer for this episode, is he no longer drinks, but maybe not totally, but he doesn't drink margaritas as much anymore.
Yeah.
He's on like a no-sugar diet these days, so his main drink now is just tequila with, as he said, a lot of water. But he does have cheat days, so maybe he has margaritas on his cheat days.
Well, that's like he said, Now, guys, when he was with Justin and Lynn, he said, you can't ruin my reputation because all the people from the cast of The Escape from Margarita, the show that was on Broadway, they all wanted to go out and party with him after the show. He said, no, I can't. And he didn't tell him why. He just said, I've got other engagements. I got to go. Well, he told Lynn and Justin, though, the reason he couldn't. He said, I got to go back to the hotel and have a bowl of soup and go to bed. I'm just worn out.
now you're publicizing a story.
Well, that's a little insight for our neat listeners only.
Well, I do. Like, it's funny because, like, I mean, you know, for as much as he drinks, he also was kind of known, maybe on the down low for a while, as a pretty big pothead. But he said that when he was talking about not drinking margaritas anymore, he also said that he doesn't smoke pot anymore. He still like vapes the oil, but doesn't smoke anymore. So.
Well, he may not smoke it, but he, once again, being the entrepreneur, he found an opportunity to cash in. So when marijuana became legal in California, he worked with somebody else to develop his own brand, and it's called Coral Reefer. So yeah, why not? Yeah. So, you know, the guy knows how to do it.
There you go.
But here's a few fun facts about him. He has embarked on more than 40 tours throughout his musical career. He sold over 20 million albums worldwide. His genre of music is mostly called Gulf and Western or Drunken Caribbean Rock, but there's not really anything else to compare it to. He has appeared on Hawaii Five-O several times, and he's been on it under the character of Frank Bama, who was the lead guy in his fiction book, Joe Merchant. So he did that. His most unforgettable cameo, though, was in Jurassic World.
That's right.
Where he was?
The margarita guy.
Margarita guy, yeah. And yeah. When the dinosaurs start coming, he goes running out with a margarita in each hand. That was his part in it.
I feel like that's the guy you want to be in a dinosaur attack.
Yeah. And he's had such people as Paul McCartney, Sheryl Crow, Brian Wilson, Roy Orbison, and Ric Flair, and Sean Payton of the New Orleans Saints in his Coral Reefer band as special guests some nights when he would perform places. So he kind of slips in a celebrity now and then. Margaritaville was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2016, and Margaritaville is considered the most lucrative song ever written because of all the other stuff that it led to that's under it.
I mean, that sounds, yeah.
Yeah.
What could even come close?
Nothing. I mean, there's nothing that's such a, yeah.
Yeah. Well, a song that equals 70 restaurants or, you know.
One of the other things I learned.
Retirement homes.
One of the other things I learned is I didn't realize how many other famous singers have dragged him in to do duets with him, that they wanted to sing a duet with. He even did one with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot. He's really in demand. You know,
is he your hero, Dad?
He is, and he's a great guy. I mean, he makes a lot of money, and a lot of people make a lot of money. I mean, let's face it, they're dicks. You know, they got money; they don't need to be nice people. But he is a genuinely nice guy,
and he has done a lot of like charitable work and aid work. You know, like
save the manatee.
Yeah, he's big about the manatees. After Katrina, he donated a lot of money. He did a lot for. Yeah, so, you know, like he gives back.
Right. Yeah, he does. Absolutely. He wrote the team song for the Miami Dolphins as a form of Fins. He changed the words a little bit from his song Fins and changed it a little bit for the Dolphins, even though he was a diehard New Orleans Saints fan. He grew up, he was at the very first game the New Orleans Saints ever played.
Oh, wow.
And he has always been a diehard New Orleans Saints fan. And he just boycotted the year that they suspended Sean Payton because of some rule violations that had taken place. So since they suspended him, he wouldn't go to the games.
Well, got to stand for something, I guess.
That's right. So stand for the people that are with you. So that's why he let him perform some in the Coral Reefer band, because he was without a job right then anyway. But he's a millionaire. I mean, Sean Payton is. I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, he was out of work. You got to do something. Could you play a triangle?
That's right. Everybody could do that, or a tambourine.
There you go. Sure. Hey, that takes talent.
Yeah, sit there and rhythm. Hit it on your leg.
Yeah. Well, do you have any final thoughts on Jimmy Buffett or margaritas or both? Jimmy Buffett with a margarita?
I mean, like I say, one of the highlights of my life was actually meeting him. I never thought that I would get to meet the guy. And we stood back there and we all were in a group, the whole family there. And I was standing next to him and I was holding Cooper in one arm and had my other arm around Jimmy Buffett. And he was standing there and he looked up and he goes, "Damn, you're big." He's short. He's only like 5'8" or something like that. So he doesn't look that short up there, but we sure had a good time meeting him and, everything about Jimmy Buffett, you know, I just enjoy him. You have to have a good time if you're playing Jimmy Buffett music and just letting it go.
Well, I'm glad you got to, it's not always safe to meet your heroes, but I'm glad you had a good impression of me and yours.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's a good one. I'd go hang out with him anytime.
Yeah, well, why didn't you get his number? He was right there.
Yeah, well, you know, he does call Justin sometimes.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was standing there in the room with him, and Justin looked at his phone and jumped and went running out of the room. He goes, "Yeah, hi, Jimmy, what's going on?"
That's wild.
And he was talking to him, wanted his opinion on some things. But you see, he's smart. He's networking because he knows what kind of audience the boys have. And he realizes, hey, that's a whole lot of people, and that's an audience that I want to, you know, enjoy my music. And the boys have done several episodes about it.
Yeah. Well.
So, I mean, I remember they talked about that time that we went to that Margaritaville in, wasn't that at Universal Studios?
Yeah.
And that's where the shot-up plane is, too. That's it. That's that Margaritaville in Universal Studios. Huh. The actual plane that he got shot down in.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's a fun guy. Not a mushroom, but a fun guy.
No. You gotta take the opportunity to mix yourself up. Even if you didn't drink them on the 22nd, you know, this is the first you're hearing of National Margarita Day. That's okay. Just next Monday, you can make it your first Margarita Monday, or just whenever you're listening to this episode.
That's right, and give a toast to old Jimmy Buffett.
There you go. Or I guess, you know, tequila with a lot of water as he drinks it nowadays. I don't know if I like that drink order. That just sounds...
Yeah.
That's fine. I mean, that's fine.
Well, yeah, if you mix it yourself, though, it's not that much sugar. I mean,
Margarita? That's true, yeah.
The pre-mix... You know, if you get one of those already mixed up, yeah, it probably is. And all you're doing is adding tequila to that. That's probably got a sugar. But if you make it yourself, then it's not got that much.
No, absolutely not. If anything, I think if you've had the premix and then you make a fresh margarita, it's not going to taste sweet enough for you. Because when you're just like, you know, 2 3/4, 3/4, your only sweets coming from Cointreau, it's not that sweet. It's a pretty dry, tart drink.
Right.
You know, I will put a little, you know, like a Texas style, you'll put a little orange juice in there to sweeten it up, or a little agave is popular, and add a little bit of sweetness to it, because I think we're so trained on that margarita mix flavor that if you really have a classic margarita, it does not taste sweet enough.
I like those better that way, though.
Yeah, I do too now. I think with the first time I made one, I was like, I must have done something wrong, and I'm like, nope, I've just been drinking them wrong.
Yeah. Well, that's like me. I always drank the ones that were frozen, and now I like them on the rocks better.
Yeah, no, same. I do sometimes like a Tommy's margarita.
Yeah.
Your margarita.
Yeah.
Tommy's margarita is 2 ounces of tequila. Instead of Cointreau, you use like 1/2 ounce of agave, or if you make an agave syrup, you can use, you know, 3/4 to a full ounce, and lime juice. So you've got agave in place of the Cointreau, and then you use a ton of orange bitters to give you that orange flavor.
Oh.
And it's a little bit of a different texture because you've got agave has a kind of tactile quality you get from a sugar syrup. But you still get the orange flavor from that, from the bitters. So that's what I always recommend to people that don't like the dryness of a real margarita.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, we got to talk about, I have tons more that I could talk about, but I mean, he's just such an interesting guy, and you can't go wrong with his music or his favorite drink or the lifestyle.
Well, and if you're stuck in Times Square, which is, you know, true hell, you just escape to Margaritaville. It's right there.
Yeah.
Well, that's four bars. One of them will have a seat.
Sounds like a good place to hang out.
I was just there for like a day and a night, and I just felt like we kept wandering to different floors, and there were different bars, and they all had different drinks, but they were all good. It was like, I'm not going to leave. I think I could, if I keep moving, they can't find me to kick me out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Dad.
Well, thank you, Tay. It was fun discussing my hero.
Yeah, well, this was a fun one. Thank you all for listening, of course. If you want to send us an email, you can email us at neatheboozecast@gmail.com. If you want to find us on our socials, we are neatboozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to support us, we have a Patreon. If you're one of our patrons, our videos are now Patreon exclusives. If you want to check out our YouTube channel, you can see what you're missing out on, because we got a bunch of free videos up there. But we make cocktails and talk a little bit more about what we do. So if that interests you, it's just $1 a month to get access to the videos. And there are more rewards at higher tiers. And of course, to our current Patreons, current patrons on our Patreon, thank you so much. And if you just want to talk to other people about Jimmy Buffett or cocktails or what have you, you can do that.
Or Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
There you go. There it is.
I get them out in some combination of words. It's not always right, but the words are all there.
I think Facebook and Jimmy Buffett just make sense together. And I don't know what that means. All right. But thanks again. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. Wasting away again in Margaritaville, searching for my lost shaker of salt.
Salt. Salt. Salt.
Salt. Salt. Salt. Some people say that there's a woman to blame, but I know
boop, 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 boop.
It's my own damn fault.